Welcome to Nell and Matt's Obsolete Movies, the podcast where we revisit movies from our 20-plus years of collecting films on obsolete formats. Or another way of thinking about the podcast, we review films available, at least, in the VHS era. And our film for this episode is Bob Roberts from 1992. And we have it on Laserdisc, getting it actually from Ides Entertainment in Pittsburgh. As new old stock, actually. I bought it a year or two ago while Christmas shopping and actually had to break the shrink wrap. So this was a virgin Laserdisc that we watched. This film, which is again another, eventually we're going to have to like do Ghostbusters or Star Wars or something, you know, but another film you might not have seen, but maybe you should is Bob Roberts. And so the plot, the premise, Tim Robbins plays a right-wing folk singer senatorial candidate in Pennsylvania.
Think Rick Santorum.
Pre-Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum era Rick Santorum.
Yeah.
If you guys remember Rick Santorum. But cooler.
Right.
Because he fences and rides a motorcycle and plays guitar. I don't think Rick Santorum does any of those things. Yeah. He just says stupid stuff on CNN.
And very handsome. Tim Robbins is very handsome.
And Tim Robbins is very handsome. He's running against the incumbent sort of mid-century World War II vet Democrat played by Gore Vidal. A lot of this movie was shot in Pittsburgh. And yeah, it's this political climate of, you know, still post-Watergate, post-Iran-Contra, pre-Iraq War is all the background of this film. And as Bob Roberts plays this hip, new, cool sort of reactionary folk conservative who says that the 60s are over and, you know, America's about making money. And yeah, it runs for Senate and some things happen. But that's the premise of the film. That's, I think, what you need to know in terms of what happens, you know? And it's shot cinema verite sort of documentary style. So this is a mockumentary. Yeah. And so that is the film. Initial reception was, everybody loved it. I mean, the reviews even on the DVD, on the Laserdisc, you know, Siskel and Ebert liked it. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone called it at the time one of the best films of the year. Richard Corliss of Time called it hilarious. Like, they didn't have to scrape the bottom of the barrel for good reviews. You can always just tell when the really important people, you know, or the famous people. But, you know, I guess they say, I guess there's a really great Entertainment Weekly piece that came out in 2017. That sort of revisits the film. The film came out in September 1992, which was, of course, the Bush, H.W. Bush versus Clinton electoral presidential election. And the movie was gone from theaters before Election Day.
Yeah, it did not do very well.
It did not do very well. And so we're kind of revisiting this film that in the, you know, last few days of the Trump presidency, hopefully.
Yeah. Yes. And it feels all too real because it is very much about cult of personality in this particular film and him. What did they say? It was like the conservative rebel.
Yes.
So he's painting himself as this, though extremely wealthy. He lives in Bryn Mawr, which is on the main, if you listen to our other one, it's the main line in Philadelphia. Any of our other podcasts, we talked about it in, with Marnie, is that he lives there. He's a super, super wealthy man, but who's painting himself as this, like, everyman who worked hard.
Right-wing populist, working-class populist, white resentment populist.
Yes.
And that did very well in Pennsylvania, and it has actually in the years since, 2016 and parts of Pennsylvania in 2018, actually, has really landed with a lot of Pennsylvania voters.
Yeah.
Especially our friends in the Laurel Highlands. If you go back to, was that episode 2 or 3 with All the Right Moves? People in that area, in the Johnstown, Cambria County, Somerset County area, actually more people voted for Trump in 2020 in that region then voted for, same with Westmoreland County, which is the county between those two.
Yeah.
More people have become Republican in that county. And it is this cult of personality, resentment politics.
Yeah. And so he...
Media spectacle.
Yeah, so he... Thing. So in addition to, like, him running for Senate in Pennsylvania, he, on his campaign trail, is singing, is a folk singer as well. So, but his things are, like, songs about complaining about people on welfare and, like, all this really horrible, horrible, horrible songs. In the Entertainment Weekly interview, Tim Robbins said he actually never released the songs because his biggest fear was to have a conservative radio host play them.
Unironically.
Which is... So, watching this, it was, like, almost too real for me. Like, it was just, like, I was, like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we were gonna... sometimes, folks, Secrets of the Kingdom, sometimes we literally watch the film run up into this office, plug the mic in, and go for it. That was not an option last night. No, I don't think for either of us.
We both had to step away.
And, you know, which is part of what makes this, film... when we get to the end, is it a lost classic or whatever? It is a comedy, or was meant to be a comedy.
It's very dark.
But it's a deeply unfunny comedy. I mean, there's only one or two scenes that made me laugh, because I think the social satire or social critique is even more on point today than it was in 1992.
Yeah, I think it came. So Tim Robbins wrote and directed and starred in it, and he part of the reason he starred it was to help get funding. And then when they needed more funding, Alan Rickman came along to help them out.
Yes, who was kind enough to be like, yeah, we need 2 stars for this movie.
Yeah.
And I guess he said in that interview, they were already here in Pittsburgh in pre-production.
Yeah, when he needed Alan Rickman.
When he needed another star. And Alan Rickman was like, I'm there. Let's do this. Yeah. He loved the script.
So it came from, Tim Robbins, it actually came from a Saturday Night Live skit. So Matt remembered that, randomly remembered.
I remember reading the Wikipedia entry years ago, and it's still in there. Though, so it was there, if you do go to YouTube and look for Bob Roberts' Saturday Night Live, there's a skit that he did in that character after, in October of 1992, after the film came out.
Yeah.
But there is something that's like not archived online.
That's
a
from the
skit
80s.
From 1986, right, where where Tim Robbins plays the Bob Roberts character. So so this is also the darkest SNL spinoff, I think.
But he wrote this skit for SNL because he was born in California, but lived in Greenwich Village for a while his dad was in the Highwaymen, which is a folk group. And so he lived in Greenwich Village. And so the initial skit from 1986 was his kind of backlash to the gentrification of Greenwich Village and having kind of yuppies buying up condos and living there, and just kind of how everything had changed and that these kind of yuppies were kind of ugly people and ugly consumers. And that's initially where it came from. So he was a folk singer, but he wasn't a politician at that particular time. So he was a wealthy folk singer. He did it. So it comes from like a very dark, a very dark place as well. And it's his kind of reaction to gentrification. Yeah. And so I think I was telling Matt, I actually had never seen Bob Roberts.
It was my first time.
And I think, it came out in 92. So I would have been in my teens at the time. Mm-hmm. And my family was not a political family. They weren't really interested in politics. And the only kind of politics that we ever talked about was that if you live in Glen Olden, make sure you register as a Republican when you're 18, because that's the only way you can get things done, is if, as long as you're a Republican, then you're accepted. That was like the extent of politics that was discussed in my house. I think in 92, I wasn't even old enough to vote at that particular time when it came out. So I don't think, even if I had an opportunity to see it in the 90s, I don't think it would have connected with me, because it's so cynical and it's so dark. And I think it's also coming, it's 92, so you're coming out of the 80s, right? So you're kind of coming out of the yuppie phase of the 80s. And there was still some of that stuff there.
Yeah.
Right. And that would have been right around, like, say, like Nirvana breaking through. So, you know, like,
the world started to get a little funky.
Yeah.
And I think there was also, you know, one of the things I find fascinating thinking about the historical context. So it did come out September 1992. There was some kind of shift happening, or we believe some kind of shift was happening with that election.
Right.
You know, Bill Clinton was the first rock and roll president.
Yeah.
You know, he liked Fleetwood Mac.
He had a saxophone.
And he played the sax. And, you know, he was on Arsenio Hall, which you think in 1992, a presidential candidate, in some people's eyes and in the eyes of some people in my household that I grew up in, being on an evening talk show almost sort of invalidated a presidential candidate. Whereas now it's kind of expected. Like, you're supposed to be able to do that media thing. I mean, a big thing, you know, Donald Trump being on The Tonight Show and the host of The Tonight Show, Jimmy Fallon, messing up Donald Trump's hair really changed the campaign. And so in that context, you had in 92... And it was I Feel Your Pain.
Yeah.
It was I Feel Your Pain, and in 88 it was Thousand Points of Light.
Yeah.
And in 84, it was Morning in America.
Yeah.
And even like that Morning in America commercial, the New York Times, probably now 4 or 5 years ago. Well, maybe now. It's probably during Trump. So less than four years ago, did a breakdown of that commercial. And at the time in 1984, America was in a deep recession. Mm-hmm. There was already rumblings about Iran-Contra and shady dealings and... That race was neck and neck, and a lot of people credit the Morning in America ad, which the New York Times broke down as, like, you know, it was the first ad of its kind, sort of, and, like, made all these factual claims that statistically don't work. You know, it was like, this number of Americans got married this year, and it was like, that wasn't a high number of people getting married or low number of people. It's just, that sounds like a lot of people getting married. This future, right,
yeah,
is happening. People are, you know, having babies now or something because of Ronald Reagan. And while the campaign was close at the time, that ad changed everything.
Poor Mondale.
Poor Mondale. But when that ad started airing, Reagan had a negative approval rating, and that race was neck and neck.
Yeah.
And again, the idea of junk politics, and I think, what does that mean for us today? That context, which sometimes people can kind of see as the good old days.
Yeah.
But... You know, we had, then we had Hope and Change, and then we had, well, we had a whole lot of fear, we had Hope and Change, and then we had Make America Great Again. And you think now we, you know, we're, you, Biden had campaigned for 2 years and never established a signature issue.
Just.
A nicer guy.
Yeah.
I'm a nicer guy that's not that other guy.
Yeah.
And that can win you an election now.
Yeah.
And so there is maybe a deep cynicism about democracy and the way that maybe this film is an artifact for an era when maybe we have a right to feel deeply cynical about democracy.
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah.
What'll people vote for? And that's part of the Bob Roberts character. It's clothed in this cartoonishly reactionary, or what would have been... at the time, cartoonishly reactionary character that's a buffoon, sort of.
Yeah.
But he's also much more likable and much more human than Tucker Carlson.
Yeah.
Which is kind of also weird to realize that, you know, at some point you could have nostalgia for a Bob Roberts-style conservative.
Yeah.
Who just is resentful about his, you know, not being wealthy enough. If that was the only issue that really got people riled up.
So the film is a mock documentary. So it does, and the camera crew is following.
And they're British, which is always fascinating. Yeah, like, you always need that context of, you know, the British gorillas in the misting in America.
So it is a film crew following Bob Roberts on the campaign trail as he... goes across the United States, but because everything is filmed in Pittsburgh, you're like, wait, that's not Harrisburg, that's Pittsburgh.
That's not Altoona.
Anyway, I think a part of the issue, though, for me is, like, when you have mockumentaries or mock documentaries, like, think of This is Spinal Tap, where they're just ridiculous, and it's hysterical and funny. Tim Robbins plays him so straight and so sincerely.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, it's horrific. Like, for me, in some ways,
this is more... And the Alan Rickman character is horrific as the campaign manager who's the shadowy, you know...
Who did have connections to Iran-Contra, you know, supposedly...
There's the lead up to the first Iraq war, where, again, you had a populace who didn't want the war, who then... And Canadian Bacon is a great companion film to this, where just America got steadily convinced, even through the nightly news, that this was a good idea.
Yeah.
So that's part of the context of this film, too, which is also, quite horrific in...
Yeah, and even the SNL, the savings and loan scandal, and, you know, all the damage that did.
Which people already forget about.
And so I think, like, in the sense of, like, Tim Robbins just playing him so sincerely and so straight, that's, I think, what really, I was like, oh my gosh. Like, A, it's mirroring what happened with Trump, and B, it's like... He played him so straight, which made it more disturbing.
Yeah.
Because he didn't make him buffoonish or someone to, like, mock. Because, like, as you get further into the film, and I think this is probably why the film did not do well, is because as you get further into the film, you realize how... dangerous his character really is.
Yes.
This character is dangerous. And so initially you're like...
Unrecognizable.
And you're initially like, oh, it's this homegrown guy who was in the military and, you know, is wealthy, conservative now, rallying against Democrats and the 60s and, you know, people looking for handouts. But then you realize he is very, very strategic and is willing to do whatever he needs to do.
To get power. And to get additional wealth.
Even to the extent of the Democrat that he's running against, a picture, gets out into the media of him. And it looks like he's a young girl is leaving his car and that there's rumors he's having an affair. But the whole picture is, it was his granddaughter's friend and his granddaughter was in the back seat. But that was out there and Bob Roberts keeps bringing it up. And so that is now fact.
And values voters, of course, start, it's his philandering. You know, it's like, again, if you repeat a lie enough times.
Yeah. But then we find out that he has, it's Broken Dove, I believe it's called, his nonprofit organization. Yeah. That you have this kind of crazy liberal reporter who's kind of trying to interview, keeps popping up trying to interview Bob Roberts, who keeps bringing up these things and has discovered that Broken Dove was involved with SNL loan scandals, was using that money that they were supposed to get to fund building of low-income housing, to fund other things that they're supposed to be... helping with fighting against drugs, but that money was being funneled into other things. And so you discover that, and it's actually being funneled, he believes, into guns and weapons and illegal drugs to bring them more money. And so you kind of slowly reveals that this man is not this good person that he's letting himself to be.
Which, you know, the other thing about it now, and I suddenly realize that this is a problematic element in the film. If there is anybody who is over the top...
It's the reporter.
Well, there's the reporter, and then there's Jack Black's character. That's what the thing is.
Jack Black's first role.
It's Jack Black's first role. I did see the movie in the 90s. I believe I was actually encouraged to see it by... a former friend, former college roommate, former libertarian political candidate who thought the film was hilarious, though he was far on the right spectrum. Also, political science major. Is that it is maybe the common people, whether it is the far left person who is critical and engaging and informed about the world and is willing to question the American narrative. And then you have Jack Black as one of these three brothers who is a Bob Roberts super fan.
Yeah.
And I think it's so interesting for me, for us now, again, seeing the film in 2021. What does it mean? It's so much, I mean, the attempted coup or whatever happened at the Capitol. Yeah, you can make fun of the guy with the Viking horns and the face paint for being a cartoon character.
Yeah.
But the actual figure of Trump, or the idea that what Trump represents, I mean, when people say the next Trump's going to be more competent, yeah, maybe the next Trump will be as well-spoken as Bob Roberts. The fact that Trump can't put a sentence together and hasn't for many years has allowed, maybe you don't take him seriously, maybe you do, maybe you don't, whatever. Will the next Trump be more competent? Yeah. More dedicated to actually working at pushing an agenda, being more interested in being president than just winning the presidency, kind of thing. That's what makes it scary, and that there's maybe something in the American character that enables that, or at least in Western democracy that enables that. Because, I mean, Italy had Berlusconi, and, other countries have dabbled in this, what's happening in Poland right now. People have dabbled in this sort of nationalist pride thing, resentment against other people.
Yeah.
You know, you can get into a lot of what's happened to Western and Eastern Europe over that. But the fact that the only over-the-top crazy characters are common people. And so, Jack Black's first role, Bob Roberts superfan.
Yeah. And he's like a deadhead. He's following Bob Roberts.
Where it's so, around on the campaign trail. There's a vigil outside of Bob Roberts' hotel room hospital room.
Yeah. So we have to get to a couple things with that, because I think going back to Trump being on Jimmy Fallon's show, so there is in Saturday Night Live, like Trump being on Saturday Night Live, and so there is, they call it the cutting edge, but it's a very
cutting edge live, but
very,
it's Saturday Night
very
live.
Thinly veiled Saturday Night Live. And him really, really critiquing, because when Saturday Night Live first came out, it really was supposed to be the counterculture and fighting against authority. And then we all know what has happened. Now, with Trump, they did start really pushing back, and they had a couple really good seasons around that. But, the cutting edge, they have Bob Roberts on. And the parent company is cozy with Bob Roberts. And so he's basically given the opportunity to sing a campaign song on the show. And so that was really interesting to think about, kind of what is supposedly perceived like dangerous media, or that, we're counterculture, we're fighting against,
which is just hegemonic.
That was really interesting. And that actually predicted what happened with Trump. He got on Jimmy Fallon, he got on Saturday Night Live, and he kind of came off as this kind of kind of everyday, everyman kind of person.
Figure who.
And then the other thing, and I'm not a conspiracy person theory person, but I think I'm just a deeply cynical person at times. But, it's very convenient that Trump got COVID right around the time he did and was in the hospital, and there were the vigils. I know that's wrong to say. Bob Roberts is kind of neck and neck with Gore Vidal, who is your typical Democrat. Well, like kind of
mid-century Democrat.
You would say this, and he's a bleeding. Oh, actually, I think Bob Roberts writes a song called "Bleeding Heart Liberal," which is against him. Who does believe in that, like the government should help people and support people and all this other stuff. Yes, absolutely. So Bob Roberts cannot seem to get ahead of him. And he is supposedly, there's a supposed assassination attempt.
Yes.
And he ends up in the hospital, which enables him to really pull forward.
Yes, they get in the election. So much sympathy from.
And the supposed assassin is the reporter who's been trying to reveal all this information about Bob Roberts' shady dealings and his campaign manager's shady dealings. He's the one who is said to be the supposed assassin, and they don't have any evidence. He's released.
Yeah.
He actually has palsy, and he can't even shoot.
Yes, they put the gun in the wrong hand.
Yeah, with it. So, all these things, it's like, you watch it. So I think if I had watched this in the 90s, if I had watched it when it came out, I would not have been ready for it. If I had watched it in the 20s, I'd be like, oh, this is kind of like so ridiculous. Now watching it now, you're like, oh, wait. We actually saw some of this actually happen. We did see some.
I mean, yeah, and I mean...
So was he just really ahead of his time?
Well, he was ahead of his time as a social critic. And again, I do think, you know, for me, thinking about this era, we've been on this road for a very long time. Yeah. I mean, again, to go back on my junk politics soapbox, having some sort of narrative is what wins an election. It's... Yeah. Very hard, and I think a lot of people, even when you talk about policy, almost get it sounds vulgar to people.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, oh, that's too complicated. Like, immediately now, here we are, Biden's not even elected yet, and there's a flame war happening on Twitter over the proposed stimulus package that'll be introduced on, I guess, Thursday.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, the ideas about minimum wage and ideas about the dollar amounts for further stimulus checks. And it's like, now that you get in the numbers, you get into this very muddied, very contentious, that's just too much money or whatever, kind of vague, speculative, existential thing. But if you have a very nice narrative, that'll win.
Right.
And so for me, that I find that fascinating that, you know, I think Tim Robbins as Bob Roberts really kind of captured that. And was there this new narrative approaching, especially as the 60s generation gets older? I think it's also very apt. I mean, I always felt like the 2016 election, and I had this conversation with my students, the 2016 election was more about who was right in 1968. Mm. Who was more right about Vietnam? That was the big issue of the 2016 election. Who was cool when they were in college in the late 60s and who wasn't?
Yeah.
And so there's so many references throughout the film. The 60s are over. The culture war is still churning. Yeah. Now, you know, going on 50 years later, we're still engaged in this. Like, who was cool? I mean, that was also W. Bush versus John Kerry. The whole narrative. They were in an Ivy League school together, and they didn't like each other even then.
Yeah.
You know, who was cool in the late 60s as the most important issue politically that this country has faced for the next maybe 50, maybe 60, maybe 70 years? Like, how long are these people going to live? Yeah. How long are they going to be in charge of politics? I think him understanding that sort of junk politics...
Yeah.
And I know there was a book that came out that critiqued George H.W. Bush's 1,000 Points of Light as, like, the rise of junk politics. I wonder if Tim Robbins was familiar with that book.
Yeah.
And just think about, like, well, how can we express this and what kind of new narratives maybe, or what new conservative reactionary narratives might, you know, how do you make conservatism hip and cool again?
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting too, because like it's like the okay boomer moment, but he is the product of crappy, so the Bob Roberts character is product of crappy boomer parents, right?
Yes.
So he does mention like his mom tries to raise him on a commune and all this other stuff and how that doesn't work, and her parenting politics, which kind of caused him to be
reactionary. I mean, it's almost like Ned Flanders. I mean,
he even joined the military. He went on to become a Marine or joined the military. That reactionary. Yes, it's like Ned Flanders.
Where his parents are beatniks, so he becomes the conservative evangelical.
So he's like Alex Keaton cubed in some ways. Very much, much so. Yeah. Alex Keaton cubed. Where you feel like Alex Keaton actually has a conscious. Bob Roberts doesn't. He completely lacks it.
No, he only believes in power, which I think is also something that, you know, the veneer in American politics that power is the only thing that matters, and there's not even any sort of, for an awful lot of people, not even any sense that, you know, well, more people voted for that person, they should win. You know, that doesn't matter as much as seizing and keeping power, which is... Yeah, also a way that the film is highly disturbing in 2021 to watch it today.
Yeah. So there was this film, The Campaign, with Zach Galifianakis and Will Ferrell, that looked at the power dynamics and how wealthy individuals will interfere with campaigns to get what they want to happen. And that movie actually ends up on a happy ending where Zach Galifianakis actually ends up being this, gets elected, becomes like a really good guy who's fighting for the people. Mm-hmm. So it kind of, that looks at the dark underbelly of politics, but it ends on a happy ending where Bob Roberts doesn't. It does not.
No, I mean,
give
you have this,
happy
you know,
ending.
And maybe it's for me, what makes the film so disturbing is that you have this cementing of this kind of new ruling class. You know, the cover of the box, and again, it's meant to be sort of mocking. It's Bob Roberts as Tim Robbins, literally draped in an American flag, possibly naked underneath. And in a weird way, yeah, we live in Bob Roberts America. Mm-hmm. You know, in 92, would this been a fringe idea? Could people have felt really good about voting for Bill Clinton? Because, again, first rock and roll president, you know, he was Bubba, he was down homesy, even more down homesy than H.W. Bush, who was supposed to be more down homesy than the movie star Ronald Reagan. again, whatever that narrative is. And then, of course, you get H.W. Bush, whose, I think, biggest campaign attribute might have been, other than fear, you know, that you would have a couple beers with him. He was more, I could have a couple beers with that guy than Al Gore or John Kerry. And how many people did that just carry?
Yeah.
You know, sure. He even met his wife at a barbecue, that W. Bush. They were at a barbecue and they met. He met Laura Bush. You know, that sort of thing and that sort of gussied up wealthy elite who seems very common and that the common man can relate to, as the way that the American ruling class kind of works.
Yeah.
And that's also what makes this film. You literally perhaps see the sausage being made in Bob Roberts.
Yes.
Which, again, I laughed once. It's a comedy. But...
yeah. You know what? And I wonder, because maybe for, like, Americans, we're not ready for that deep level of dark comedy. If it was a French film, you'd be like, oh, yes.
Well, I
very
think we
dark.
Still have the narrative of exceptionalism.
Yes, that's true.
And, you know, what is funny for me is the day of the Capitol siege. Every foreign-born friend that I have, a colleague through academia, in one way or another put on social media, today proves American exceptionalism is bullshit.
Yeah.
And how many people still buy into that narrative? How many people still want to redeem that narrative?
Yeah.
And how hard is it once you get past that exceptionalism and just say, no, we're a country with problems and with these maybe short circuits in our political system. And maybe these kind of dumb laws that we're somehow emotionally attached to and we don't want to do anything about to make our lives better.
Yeah.
That also, I think, is this could be a very hard watch for some people because it's so real and it's so stark and it's so immediate. All these years later.
The thing that I find interesting, too, is Tim Robbins doing it. So, like, he would have... This would have been between Bull Durham and Shawshank.
Wow.
And so that's... It's sandwiched between those two really big films, and he opted to do...
A low-budget cinema verite mockumentary in Pittsburgh.
Yes. Which is, like, fascinating. That's very politically charged.
Yes. Incredibly.
That's so fascinating that he opted to do that.
Yes. And then when the credits roll, it's I Got to Know by Woody Guthrie is the song that's playing, which is a lesser-known Guthrie, but it is this American folk elegy of someone just questioning, you know, why am I homeless? Why am I impoverished? You know, I got to know why this all this happened to me and why all this is happening. And then actually the last shot, the last thing after the credits roll is just back black and white in bold Helvetica letters vote. So, I mean, it's not subtle.
Yeah.
Also, another thing I have to say in the low budget Pittsburgh thing is there is a cameo in the film of Mr. Rogers's King Friday the 13th castle. So they shot the cutting edge live sequences at QED Studios in Pittsburgh. And you can actually, and again, you have this moment of you're like, oh, that's a Pittsburgh that I wasn't a part of. And I didn't, you know, we didn't live here then. And I'd been to the city by then, but
yeah.
Then suddenly there's a scene where a character turns the corner and the camera's following them, walking angrily, you know, from one set to another, and you see, oh, it's King Friday the 13th Castle, you know. Yeah. So that's a great cameo.
Which Fred Rogers would have been diametrically opposed to Bob Roberts. So it's like,
yes, that is, see, yes,
that moment in there. It's also interesting in the fact of like, the guest stars in it. And so some of the guest stars would have been popular in 92, whose careers might not have really.
Mm-hmm.
But like, so Juan Carlos Esposito, who played Bugs, the journalist, he's in The Mandalorian and Better Call Saul, so he's really popular now. Gore Vidal,
mm-hmm.
John Cusack did it. Peter Gallagher, who was bigger in the 90s. Definitely Alan Rickman, Susan Sarandon, who was Tim Robbins' partner at the time. James Spader, Fred Ward, who was, if you know Tremors, he was in that. It's amazing, like, David Strahan, Pamela Reed, Helen Hunt. My favorite, though, Jack Black, of course, Fisher Stevens, Jeremy Piven. But my favorite one is, she was on, actually, Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, Lynn Thigpen. She was the chief on Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego. So every time when she was on, I was like, wait, that's the Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego woman. And she's an interviewer on Good Morning Philadelphia, who basically right before the interview is like, I hate you.
She sees through him immediately.
Yeah. And, yep. And she, it's like an amazing, this amazing, intense cameo.
Yeah.
With it. So it was interesting all the people he was able to participate in this very dark, dark comedy that he convinced to join and participate in it.
Yeah. So are we ready for the big five?
Sure.
All right. So question one, of course, is it camp, retro, classic, or just an old movie?
I feel like it's a lost classic. I think that's what you're hinting at.
Yeah.
You know, towards the beginning. It's just not a lot of people saw it. It didn't make a ton of money. I think it only made around $4 million.
Yeah, I bought the, and you'll see if you follow us on Instagram, I bought the new old stock Virgin Laserdisc for $3.99. It had literally probably been in that store unsold.
Yeah.
For close to three decades before I picked it up. Brought it home.
Yeah. I think it was just ahead of its time. Even when you Google Bob Roberts Saturday Night Live, that skit is dark too. It's a really dark skit.
It's a book burning skit.
And so it's a very, very dark skit. I think it was just a film ahead of its time. Which right now is so now. Like, it's so present, and just like what Tim Robbins was able to predict based on junk politics, as you were saying, is, to me, amazing.
Yeah, and I think after we've spent how long doom scrolling,
yeah,
you know, maybe you were right, maybe that makes the film almost weirdly more palatable.
Right.
But, yeah, definitely a lost classic. Definitely a movie that y'all should see because it is so on point in its social satire. It's not funny anymore.
Mm-mm.
But it's social satire and maybe making us think critically, which I think is an important thing for democracy. I mean, again, there's that great Doris Lessing quote, right? It takes guts to save democracy. And guts is a thing very few people have. This is a very gutsy film.
Mm-hmm.
And we need more gutsy people. And I think even, again, you know, some staunch Democrat friends of ours, kind of almost their immediate uncritical slavish adoration of Joe Biden is also, even after having this experience, really unsettling to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. That you just can't even, you know, have some distance or some realism or some, hey, what if nobody is perfect? There's only strategy, there's only the things that we can do and lobby and petition for,
yeah.
And maybe not the spectacle, not the Jack Black character. At the end, actually, one of the great sight gags is he has a bob scrolled into his forehead, kind of Charles Manson thing going on, which is glorious. But, you know, lost classic. So next is, what about the social political distance? Well, there is none, really. it's actually maybe even closer. I think that's what we've been arguing this whole time. It is closer than it's been, than it was in 1992, right?
I mean, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it is so of the moment that it's insane.
Yeah. Now, the only question of that is the only maybe, you know, pump the brakes on that is question three, this idea of the technical distance.
Yeah, so
there is no internet.
There is no internet.
There is no social media.
They have cell phones, but it's like the big giant.
It's
like,
the brick phones.
Brick phones. The laptops are the big giant brick
things,
laptops.
Or those weird the Apple Duos that had like the 3-inch screen or whatever.
So
there is that.
Yeah.
But. Again, what would this film be if you had fake Twitter?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in a way, it was also perhaps a critique of network news and the 24-hour news, the beginning of the 24-hour news cycle, which even then there was still, it was just CNN.
Yeah.
Pretty much in most homes. But even how that information, informative...
And how uncritically he was being presented by the network news.
Yes.
Which is really interesting. As we mentioned, there's the scene where in the world is Carmen Sandiego actress. She really just lets Bob Robert know that she hates him.
And then there's action, and then she's.
But then her colleague comes up and is like, "I love you, Bob Roberts. Can I have a pin?" And it was just this like. Fascinating duality that was happening,
yeah.
But she was the only one who really, of the media that's encountered, is the only one who is critical of him. And then his debate with her is, you know, are you a communist, right? So he doesn't even get into a debate with her.
I think is also, actually, that's another good point. This way, you know, the thing that Jon Stewart critiqued all those years, especially the Bush years, is that sort of rhetorical, the way you can just sensationalize, the way you can just muddy everything by, you know, an insult or this is just so absurd. We're not even going to acknowledge the validity of another side, which is a huge part of our politics today. And the characters in Bob Roberts, the Alan Rickman campaign manager character, are just so good at it.
I love Alan Rickman. I think he was giving an update about Bob Roberts, and at the end he says, "And now I'm going to go pray." And it was just like the way.
That's the one part I laughed out loud for this film.
The way he delivered that line.
Cynical, which again, the rise of, you know, the sort of post-Christianity evangelical right.
Right.
Yeah. The room test.
I mean, you do notice the cell phones and the computers.
Yeah.
At the time, they would have been huge indicators of wealth, though.
Of wealth and progress and the future.
And the future. But at that moment, you do notice those a couple times where you're like, oh. But, you know, actually in terms of, especially right now, because the man with his guitar singing about is so present now.
Yeah.
So that actually still rings.
True,
plausible of the
and
the
folks, you know, reality TV president, or the fact that, you know, Kid Rock was considering running for Senate in Michigan.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so is it a keeper?
It's definitely a keeper. I really did though we had to walk away from it because it was just too real for me.
Yeah, we needed to sleep on this movie, settle down, have some nice experiences.
The funny thing for me too, though, is like when you think about it, because it's Jack Black, John Cusack, and Tim Robbins. The next time the three of them are together in a film is High Fidelity. And where High Fidelity really talks about, like in many ways, toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
And him coming to terms with, like, how he actually treated women and things like that. So it's interesting, like, the next time you see those three together is in High Fidelity. So they go from this, like, darkly cynical film to this kind of romantic romantic comedy. It's kind of interesting for me.
But it's
a keeper. I really did enjoy it. Is it one that I'm going to be like, oh, it's a Saturday, let's pop in Bob Roberts again?
Yeah, this is not a popcorn film. No. This is the film to watch. It's such a keeper. I think I realized I do still own my original VHS copy of this.
Oh, so wow.
I own it on VHS and Laserdisc. It's that much of a keeper. It's worth having in more than one format.
Nice.
And on that note, See you next time, folks. We'll do a movie you've seen at some point in this podcast. Happen. It's going to happen. Yeah. We have Ghostbusters on Betamax.
But you know what? Everyone's seen Ghostbusters. Let's go find something new, like Bob Roberts.
Exactly, people. Exactly. Don't worry. It'll happen. But bye. Go find Bob Roberts. Bye.